a sign.
Mm-hmm. Everyone ready? Okay. Good. Yeah, so my name is Michelle Lopez.
I'm Carson Wright, and we are here with
Diane Duncan.
In her office in Austin, Texas. We are conducting an interview for the Austin Women's Activism Oral History Project. Mm-hmm. It's March 28th, 2019.
So, you said previously that you were at UT from 1966 to 1983, correct?
Yes, off and on.
Off and on, okay.
Some of that time I didn't even live here, so.
Okay. Yeah, so, I remember previously when we talked in our preliminary interview that you said you were raised in South Texas, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, where specifically in South Texas?
McAllen.
And then
back when the border was quite porous.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you also said that living in South Texas, being raised in South Texas, influenced a lot of your political views.
I think so. I don't know that it was my I come from a family of Republicans back when there was what they call yellow dog Democrats that became Republicans. My family were always Republicans, but in today's world, you'd probably call them a Bush Republican. They were more like business people.
Okay.
But my mother was the kind of woman that did a lot of, it certainly wasn't protest, but she did a lot of public civic stuff. So she was always the precinct chairman, and you know, I was raised to think that voting was not only my right, but my, you know, it was responsible, and my family talked about politics at the dinner table, and she would have me do, you know, certain things, you know, a lot of volunteer work, and you know, I mean, the school that I went to, the middle class kind of was on one side of town, and my side of town was closer to the border, and it was where, you know, I don't want to say my family was rich, but what wealth there was around us. Mm-hmm. People had horses and bigger houses. And, you know, people had ranches, and so I was exposed to the wealth that there was around there, and the political, people who were politically connected. So I got exposed to an early age that if you had money, you got certain things. But I also went to school with the migrant farm worker kids, both Anglos and Mexicans, and the Mexican kids, if they were more affluent, they would come across and go to school. And in fact, the term wetback back then simply meant that somebody crossed back and forth on the border,
right?
And so I remember one time I watched this boy, I remember his name was Jaime, and he was riding so small. And I said, Jaime, what are you doing? And he said, well, you know, paper's very expensive. It's from Reynosa. It's like, I just, both sides. So I was exposed to that kind of discrepancy.
Right.
And I would say that that's, I never liked it. It never felt right. My father probably didn't care, but I don't think my mother liked it either. And I don't know if she didn't really approve of my choices as an adult, but she helped create the person that did not think that was right or fair.
Okay.
So I appreciate that from her.
Do you feel like your views were like just like you were kind of individual in your views, or was it kind of like a widespread sentiment, like what you felt that there was injustice?
No. I mean, you know, I was around. I lived in a family with three Benson families. That's Senator Lloyd Benson.
Mm-hmm.
So no. I was the kid that was like looking around going like, what is, this is a weird place. Weird things are happening.
Yeah.
I stopped having birthdays at 9 years old because they would not allow me to invite one of my Mexican friends.
Oh, wow.
I said, okay, well, if I can't invite who I want, I just won't have them.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't, you know, but I've always been kind of, I'm not that kind of person that needs other people to tell me I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can't say that I really stood out in any particular way, didn't feel that way, but I was just a child kind of collecting information.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So when you came to UT, right? 1966.
That was sort of interesting because my family moved to San Antonio when I started high school.
Okay.
And let's just forget those 4 years. And then so then I started UT. And I think the interesting thing about this is how quickly the culture changed. Because when I started UT, girls were not allowed, if you were a good girl, whatever that was, and I would have considered myself a good girl,
yeah.
To wear pants. We had to wear skirts and dresses.
Was that like an enforced rule, or was that like a social?
Social. That okay. was the social norms for, quote, good girls, whatever that was. But everybody, of course, wanted to be a good girl. And I pledged in a sorority, and, you know, the purpose of pledging in a sorority is so you can go to fraternity parties and get drunk.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it seemed like it was. It was a party thing. And my grades reflected that. And so by the second semester, I had pretty much, I didn't flunk out of UT. I was smart enough to drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job. And then kind of later in the semester, I had a weekend party with three of my other pledges. And it lasted all weekend. And all I know is by the end of that weekend, I had... all of us had been kicked out of our apartment, and I'd already was out of UT, and lost my job because I fell asleep at the job because I was hungover. I think you get the picture. So that was the scene.
Yeah.
And when I went to high school, it was sock hops. You ever see a TV show called Happy Days?
I've heard of it,
yeah.
Well, okay, let me just tell you, that's how it was.
Okay.
And I remember there was no internet. You know, people had Time Magazine, they had Reader's Digest, you would watch, your family would watch together at Sunday night and watch the Ed Sullivan Show, where I saw the Beatles, and I heard Bob Dylan when I was, I think, in a junior, and all I knew was, like, there are people out there who are not like these people, and what can I do to meet these people? You know, it was really there was the coast. There was no third coast. There was the West Coast, there was the East Coast, and all of us, you know, in between, that's all we had. There was no way to get any information. It was on TV. It was just, none of us knew anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I entered UT hungry for stuff and just not knowing what to do. And I think I just, like a lot of kids, because I didn't know what to do and I was just trying to fit in, just drank and partied for the first year. Okay? Now, fast forward. So it was that's what UT was like. I wasn't any different than anyone else. That was 1966. So I went to Texas Tech for a year to get my grades up. That didn't work out either, but doesn't matter. Then I went back to San Antonio Junior College and worked to get my grades up to get back into UT. So when I came back to UT, it was the winter. It was January of 1969. So that's what? 2.5 years from when I started in 66. At that point, everything was different. It was like somebody turned a light bulb on.
Yeah.
Students were protesting. Everybody was dressing informally. Everything was different.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the chuck wagon. I ran into a girl that was like at the student union. There was no coffee houses. You'd go there and have coffee and hang out. And I ran into a girl that I had known. She was a couple of years older than me at a boarding house. And she took me over to a co-op with some friends that she knew who were students. And this was the Plan 2 house. Okay? And that boy who was a student sold me my first marijuana and gave me an LSD. Some LSD. And off I went. And then I started protesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just telling you, it's like a light bulb went on.
Yeah.
There was no gradual anything. When it hit, I don't know exactly when it hit, but for me, it was when I came back to Austin. So it was not sudden. It was just like, so I'm not thinking that a lot of the way in which I was raised was that different than somebody 10, 20, 30, 40. I mean, it just really wasn't that much different. Mm-hmm. Women were expected to be married. My family didn't even give me a middle name because you would just lose it when you got married. You go to, nice girls go to college to get their MRS. You know, my mother didn't work outside the home. That was what I was, thought was the normal thing to do. And my attitude from day one is I never want to get married. I didn't know how to interpret it any other way other than this doesn't look like something I want. There was no exposure to any other culture. I was never exposed to any gay culture. Every once in a while, I'd be around a man or a woman that felt different. I didn't have the words for it or the understanding of it. But, you know, I could, you know, I mean, it was butch and femme day. So the men were really, really drag queens and really flippant. And the women were, I don't know, they were the type of, I call them the old-fashioned bull dyke that rolled up sleeves with the cigarette pack here or here, and, you know. That was the scene that I came out into. But if you saw that, I didn't have the words for it. I just knew that these people were different. Mm-hmm. I didn't identify with them, you understand, but then I didn't understand with where I was. So I, like a lot of kids, was trying to find my tribe, my people.
Was that scene present in Austin in 1966, or is it just when you came back?
When I came back. So 1966, it was such a small part, that they were off doing their own thing. But your average student was my experience.
Right.
We lived in dorms. We went to parties. Kids have always gone to parties and drank too much and got alcohol. I lose track of, they kept changing the date when you could or you couldn't, but you didn't seem to block any of us. You know, back then, if girls got pregnant, abortion was not legal. Mm-hmm. Girls disappeared. Nobody talked about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't find even out until I was an adult woman, a middle-aged woman, that a lot of women I knew had had children and given them up for adoption. You didn't talk about it. It was not spoken. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it was not spoken about. Mm-hmm. Good girls and good families don't talk about these things. Mm-hmm. So everything that was kind of undercover, there was this sheen of cultural norms, and you could do it because the world was a simpler place. We were getting a single channel of information, network TV. Walter Cronkite would tell us what was happening in the world. And they would watch the Ed Sullivan Show for entertainment. And here's your Time and Time magazine with the pictures and your Reader's Digest. And you would go to the church of whatever your family went to. It was, the information was controlled. So if there was dissent and the people that were living like that, which we've always had, those people were in New York, one of those coastal areas, right? They were not here, or they were a whole lot closeted in their little whatever, so you didn't really, you were minimally exposed to it. Let me go pull her needles. She can pay another time, I'm just going to pull her needles.
Okay. I'll be right back.